That's right. That's a great, easy way to think about kind of machine learning as well, because machine learning is simply human-coded algorithms that drive some type of decisioning. So you can think about, you know, simple examples like your Netflix queue, or exactly what you're mentioning with content across different sites and your news feeds. So that's just yet another way to where I'm a big believer that AI is ultimately going to be more about intelligence augmentation than replacing us as individuals. You know, you talk about the work that Ben does creatively, phenomenal. It'd be very hard to replicate that from an AI standpoint. So what I look at is you take the blunt force computing and processing power associated with, you know, various forms of AI, applying that to problems, combined with the creativity and the intuition of an individual. And to me, how we're actually going to be adopting intelligent systems, it's more like we're talking about now, where our virtual assistants are going to be taking and enhancing our lives on a regular basis versus trying to take over and control our lives and turn us into batteries like the Matrix.
You're listening to Words and Masks Run with Eric Gaines.
Welcome to the show. This is Words of Mass Disruption. I am your host, Eric Haynes. This is episode 119, and today I sit down with Tom Edwards. He's the Chief Digital Officer over at Epsilon. He's also the creator of the brand Blackbin 360, and he was recently recognized by Ad Age as a marketing technology trailblazer. So he and I are going to talk all things artificial intelligence, or as many people call it, AI. And if you want to keep up on the latest on what is going on with AI, you should follow Tom. And in fact, Tom will be at CES this entire week. He's going to be in Vegas. Follow him on his blog, blackfin360.com. BlackFin360.com. I'll also have that in the show notes. He'll report back from the tech conference this week through the blog. He's also on Twitter. He'll be have many updates on there as well. You can also enable Blackbin 360 skill on your Alexa, and on your Google device, you can just say open Blackbin 360. He's got all bases covered. So when he and I sat down, we spent a lot of the conversation on AI, and in a way that will help you develop a perspective or help inform your current perspective on the subject matter. We also talked about personal brand and balancing that with the professional brand, and the importance of having a perspective or a point of view and sharing that perspective with others. So this conversation is going to be a two-parter. This week we will focus on the AI perspective, machine learning, IoT, and digital assistants. Part two, which will be next week's episode, number 120, that's when we're going to talk more about balancing the personal and professional brands in that competitive edge that you get as you help build a better and stronger circle around you through that personal and professional branding. I will also include some experts from previous conversations, like ones with David Meerman Scott and some other guests, that we talk about similar things. So often a lot of the dialogue or the conversation doesn't make it into every episode, but we have these little nuggets that we're waiting for the right episode to share those perspectives. So before we start today, I have one simple thing I'd like to ask you. Just please click on that subscribe button so you get notified of the latest episodes as soon as they come out. Also, please share this podcast with your friends and your coworkers. Each week, we put out a new episode on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud, followed with a blog post version on wordsofmassdisruption.net, and then a follow-up article on LinkedIn. And that's usually where most of the conversation happens, is on the LinkedIn one. The things that Microsoft has been doing with LinkedIn over the last 6 to 12 months have been amazing. And that platform is getting so much better for having these types of conversations. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and more day-to-day updates happen kind of on those platforms. So please check all those out and subscribe and share. Thank you. So as we turn the corner into 2018, there's a lot of talk about what tech will define the year of 2018. On everyone's list is AI. So I thought we should definitely start with looking at AI in a way that we could break it down for everyday conversations and look at how it is and will be applied to everyday reality. So I went to one of the smartest people I know and highly regarded people that I know on the subject of AI.
Hi, I'm Tom Edwards. I'm the Chief Digital Officer of the agency business at Epsilon. I've been in the digital space for the last 18 years across interactive agencies, startups, enterprise technology. So really bring the background of aligning marketing and technology together.
So before we dive right into AI, you need to have a base understanding of machine learning. So Tom and I will start there.
So I've been experimenting primarily with machine learning over the last 24 months. And because I'm a part of an agency organization, we're really focused on how we can take and derive insights through data. And one way to accelerate that, especially around unstructured data or data of culture, is through machine learning and AI. So from that standpoint, you know, I'm the Chief Digital Officer at the agency business at Epsilon. Epsilon has a strong heritage from a data standpoint, and how we use and leverage that data kind of differs across the organization. From an agency standpoint, we're really interested in kind of that top of the funnel. How do I derive insights? How do I go beyond traditional personas or segmentation and really apply different elements of psychographics to it? So an example here is I want to know personality types of individuals based on their online activities to then also use as a basis to connect to other data points so that I can learn more about you as an individual versus just your household income or, you know, other lifestyle attributes you may have.
Right.
And using that as a way to find creative white space or points of competitive difference for our brand partners.
So I think a lot of people, I think there's a couple buckets here. There's people that don't understand AI,
yeah, right?
Except for absolutely what they see on the commercials.
Yep.
I think Alexis is probably the closest thing that most people realize they're even experiencing.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I think a lot of what people think is AI is really machine learning.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's also that bucket of, like, you know, Skynet, right?
Yes.
You know, that part of it. So how do you kind of balance, like, the presentations you do to get people to walk away with the right takeaway?
Absolutely. So when I talk a lot about AI, I try to set some kind of basic ground rules. I try to set expectations around, why is AI such a big topic right now? What are some of the different, you know, applications of it? You know, debunking some of the myths that you were kind of talking about. You know, I talk about the fact that there are three primary reasons why we're seeing AI taking off so much right now. You've got the, you know, increase in algorithms, the massive amount of data that's out there, and then the cost of GPUs or graphical processing units so you can parallel process, you know, the information plus visualize it. Like, those are really, really key. And then understanding the difference between the work that's being done from a human-coded algorithm standpoint, that's machine learning, versus deep learning, which is modeled off of the human brain, versus natural language processing, like you mentioned with Alexa or Google Assistant or with Cortana or Siri. You start getting into the identification of natural language processing that's also combined with elements of machine learning. There's computer vision, you know, which is pulling out high dimensions of your environment and kind of basically applying structure and decisioning around your environment through the lens of kind of computer vision. So there are a number of different facets of AI. And, you know, there has to be this baseline understanding of it. There has to be an understanding of how does it apply to business. And then it's also fun to talk about, you know, everything from what most AI is today, which is artificial narrow intelligence. You know, by the mid-2020s, we'll probably see some version of artificial general intelligence. And then what everybody, you know, likes to talk about is the artificial superintelligence. You think Skynet, you think of Ultron from, you know, mm-hmm, Avengers.
That's right.
And, you know, that level of interaction.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that most people don't realize we're 20 years away from that part.
Exactly.
Of it. They kind of lump, yeah, it all together.
That's right.
So that's right. If we had to break down for the common person, you know, what is AI around them today? Like, how does Alexa use AI today? And is that really AI?
Yeah, it is. So when you talk about Alexa, that's really in this realm of conversational experiences. And what it is, it's using natural language processing, where it's basically taking some of the intents that you're saying, some of the words or the commands, and then applying that through different algorithms to basically drive different actions on your behalf. You know, Alexa is dependent on skills. So a big part of AI is that you have to train the various systems and the various models. They don't just exist. So when you talk about conversational, you think about skills for Alexa, you think about actions for Google. Google Assistant is natural language processing that's also tied into Google's knowledge graph. So you start to see these kind of combinations to where the AI systems are really there to help process information and to help with decisioning or to drive, you know, predictions on future behavior. So that's one of the ways in which I talk about it.
So is Alexa, the unit in your house, getting smarter, like internally, or is it part of a bigger network that's getting smarter on its own, or is that being managed?
So that's actually a great point. So it's really more about the Alexa voice service. That's where it's really portable. It's not about the physical form factor that's sitting in your house. That is, think of that as almost like a, lack of a better word, like a dumb terminal. It's there. It's, you know, serving a function of like being a speaker. But a lot of that interaction is actually happening via the cloud. So when you interact with it, that's why internet connectivity is such a key piece. What you're going to see over time is you're going to see the Alexa voice service begin to pop up in more places. So you saw it at CES last year in everything from washing machines to cars to the Nucleus, you know, home device. Google is following a very similar approach with Assistant. It's not just about Google Home. There are about 35 million people right now using, you know, Alexa, the kind of the form factor of the Echo with, and you also have like Google Home. 75% of that is really tied into the Alexa ecosystem. But I feel over time that Google is probably going to have more, become more pervasive everywhere, because it's across, you know, Android, it's across, you know, whether it's Android Wear or, you know, the television or in your car or wherever else. Google Assistant is really focused on being multimodal, which means it's voice, it's visual, it's voice plus visual, it's potentially touch. So you start thinking about how this one common kind of, this common interface or this common assistant is going to begin to become a very important part of your everyday life that's ultimately going to start begin to take on decisioning on your behalf. So that's a whole other discussion around this idea of the proxy web and system-based marketing.
So so you started getting in kind of the IoT area there. The new thing that Amazon started talking about recently was the deliver to home and be able to open your door and have the delivery. And that almost seems like the Google way of doing things. So it almost seems like they're kind of blending those lines now, and they're kind of getting into that other space.
Yeah.
And then connecting voice with visual. But I think it's still simple right now. Yeah. It's very simple. They're not really making that determination. Like, they don't know who that person is that's delivering it, and they're not basing open the door based on the right person delivering it yet.
Correct.
It's still very simple.
Yeah, a lot of this is still kind of in its infancy. You know, as we look at, but what really helps power a lot of this is when you enable third-party developers to really take and begin to build out an ecosystem. That's when you really start to see kind of the advancement of the hardware. You've got 15,000 skills now on the Amazon Alexa, or available for the Amazon Alexa. You've got a couple hundred now for Google in terms of actions. But even if you think back to 2007 with the release of the iPhone, the thing that really drove it, beyond the fact that it consolidated all these various devices into one, I would argue that 2008 was really that point of transformation with the launch of the App Store. And that's when you start to really begin to see the value for the device, is whenever you're able to take and personalize experiences, create new ways to engage, new foundations of entertainment. What I see a lot of right now with like the Amazon Alexa skills, you see a lot around utility, you know, some around entertainment. So we're still kind of scratching the surface for the best way to take and extend those experiences, to your point, and make it even more engaging or connect them.
I just realized that the App Store hasn't existed my whole life. I just realized it started 9 years ago.
I know. That's crazy.
And like you forget what it was like before.
Yeah.
That. Yeah.
Exactly. Rocking a Motorola Razr back in 2005, oh, yeah, trying to text time. With that. The numbers.
BlackBerry was number one.
Yeah.
I had one of the first episodes was Baron Concourse, the CDO Pizza Hut back in the day. He was talking about, he talks about in that episode how he had to go pitch to this boardroom of people that aren't, you know, using this new technology, and they're all hooked to their BlackBerries, and say, hey, we're going to be able to order pizza on this
thing.
You know, and no one had done anything at that point. And you're right. It wasn't just the phone in 2007. Mm-hmm. It was the App Store. Mm-hmm. And that's where really Nokia was another tried to really play in that App Store. They tried to do the hardware thing. Then they did the whole Microsoft thing, but that's another story.
Well, you're seeing it right now with even Apple. You know, you and I were talking about the 10 right before we jumped on here. We're talking about this, and, you know, augmented reality, virtual reality. once the technology is to the point to where it empowers the consumer to create content on their behalf, that's when you'll really begin to see scale. So it, the same thing applies here when we're talking about kind of conversational experiences tied to AI as well. You know, initially, it's about creating these simple skills that have utility, but there are a couple things that have to happen. You have to be able to have kind of pervasive identity. So you as an individual differentiating, knowing the system, knowing you versus me. You know, Google is working on that. You have to then be able to take and connect other experiences across these devices. And so that actually gets into a whole other topic of how AI is potentially going to disrupt, you know, mobile. You think about, you know, we talk about the App Store, we joke about it, but the user experience tied to your handheld device hasn't fundamentally changed since the launch of the App Store. But with a lot of these AI and conversational systems, as people become more adept at using them, those systems then are going to essentially take a lot of those functions right now that may be a native app and actually begin to bundle them almost like a middle tier, to where the actual primary consumer touch point is going to be the assistant. And the assistant is going to then stitch together different scenes of applications to then drive your experience.
And we may not even know what those apps are.
Exactly. So there's a whole disintermediation of brand that would happen, you know, at that point. And so that's a whole other topic. You know, as you think through, you know, you touched on this too, like, what are takeaways to think about? So the first one is really tied to, as you think about the role that a brand can play through conversational experiences, it has to come down to a foundational strategy that you have to think with a kind of a multimodal mindset. So developing voice first, and then it's voice plus visual, and then thinking through just the different ways and different situations in which people would actually take and interact with the technology. It's incredibly important. And then having a position within that ecosystem is really, really important. What I mean by that is taking and either creating a skill, securing your invocation term, or the word that's used when people are, you know, actioning off of Alexa, or specifically Google, it's incredibly important. Because what's going to end up happening is these assistants are going to be connected across multiple touch points, and how you're discovered through these systems is going to be highly dependent on the experiences you create within them. So you'll either be leaving it up to chance and letting the system decide what your brand experience is going to be, or you have the opportunity to kind of control that, but you have to think across all these various touch points beyond just desktop and mobile.
Yeah, it's interesting because it seemed like the big competition to iPhone at the beginning was iPhone is really simple and it's about design,
yeah,
right? And they've kind of stuck with that for the most part. Mm-hmm. Other companies were trying to do the best hardware, the best camera, the best whatever, best form factor, mm-hmm. best software.
Right.
And those never really stuck with the customer like just simple did. Yeah. So where I see a challenge is if they have to be part of that decision-making process for setting that digital assistant up, they may go with the lowest common denominator a lot of times and never really see the full potential of it. Or it's got to be smart enough to really start to go, okay, you're kind of like this profile over here.
That's right.
Let's push you towards it and see if that works or not. Okay, we got less engagement. Let's try this other profile. Something like that would probably have to happen.
No, 100%. And that ties it back to the AI, you know, topic incredibly well. Because what's going to end up happening is you're going to have these interactions that are happening across kind of these virtual assistants. Then, you know, when it comes back to creating, you know, these specific connection points, like the data that's created, the systems will then be able to take and drive predictive behavior. Like, I did a lot of research, particular research across, you know, generations of, you know, Gen Z, X, Millennial, Boomer, really thinking about the impact that AI is going to have. And the resounding sentiment was that they wanted kind of convenience to their lives. They wanted it to be easy to use. The thing that shocked me is that Gen X and Boomers were actually the most open to having systems predict on their behalf. I thought it would be inversed. I thought it would be Gen Z and Gen X. No.
Right.
So there's this desire for simplicity, knowing my specific behaviors, and then being able to drive, you know, predictive actions on my behalf. Like, that's where these systems need to go. But what's either going to make or break it are the predictive APIs that are going to be available to and the systems that we're going to take to process that. If that doesn't work, to your point, it's not going to it's not going to work.
So the target age group typically is like 20, 21, 22 to 35. Like that's the most desirable age group for everything.
Absolutely.
Right? For most stuff, right? Unless it's daytime TV, Monday through Friday, then it's a different group. But that group, over the last 10 years, I think it's because of digital. And I like to say digital age kind of started in 2007, 2008 because of the iPhone and the marketplace and all that. Mm-hmm. We haven't really seen that new customer yet because it's only been 10 years, right? So we haven't seen that customer that's really grown up 100%. So my daughter, she turns 4 next week. And she's already got a YouTube channel, an Instagram channel, all that stuff. And she's, you know,
she's not alone.
Yeah, she's not. And there's one of the biggest moneymakers last year is that, Ryan's Toys, Ryan's family, and they just started 2 years ago. And that kid is what, 5-6 years old. And we haven't seen what that person turns into or the people growing up on that, what that consumer is.
So I've got 3 Gen Zers in my house right now. I've got a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old, and he just turned 10. So I'm seeing it firsthand. You look at their behaviors, how they consume media. You know, there's a demand, there's kind of a demand to control the experience. So this idea of on-demand television, you know, they don't want to watch live television. It's about, their curated shows and what they want to watch. You know, the research that I did also showed that there's about 2.5 hours a day, in terms of on-demand content. There's an hour, half a day gaming and about 51 minutes of music. And so even my oldest son, he is, we're a family of gamers. I've been gaming since I can remember.
PUBG.
Nah, I'm a Destiny 2 guy, but yeah, okay.
Desert Matt just came out.
I was talking about that to my 15-year-old today. Actually, we were debating that versus Fortnite.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but he jokes around that he wants to be an esports athlete, like traditional athletics. He played football, he did all those things, but his passion is in consuming all things competitive gaming, and he's not alone. You've got the incredible rise of esports. 3 times the viewership of the NFL, globally. You've got the Cowboys buying complexity here locally. There's real money in it. But then you also just look at the behavioral side of it. But he always jokes. Like, his line is, esports is athletics of the mind. So, it goes back to this kind of this mindset where 69% of Gen Z actually owns a YouTube channel. 89% of them, have used some type of effect-based filter. And the real kind of takeaway here is, as a marketer, we've gone from this idea of creating, content-centric marketing. It's got to be, visual storytelling and thumb-stopping, to contextual marketing that's primarily driven through, data and, trying to drive personalization, right time, right place. To me, the next evolution is really going to be shifting to enhancing creation. Because what you're seeing now from Facebook, what you're seeing from Snap, what you're seeing from Apple with the launch of a lot of their kind of AR-centric tools, Facebook just yesterday rolled out since this is going to air later, just rolled out, AR Frame Studio to everyone. Mm-hmm. So the ability to create and enhance, because Gen Z is a generation of creators, it's less about pushing content to them, and it's more about, it's a different mindset. How do you enable their creation of content in a smart way?
Yeah, Facebook just released Creator Studio 2 weeks ago, and I was trying to get my head around that app, and now we got AR Frame, which I'm looking forward to. But I really believe, and I've said it many times on this podcast, is that 2018 is going to be the live video. Things like this will be live video, and they'll have produced bumpers and on both sides, and they'll have lower thirds, and they're going to have all this news quality, professional sports kind of presentation look to them. And that's what these tools that they're putting out there, and Facebook is trying to take that market big time away from YouTube.
Yeah. You've got that focus going on. There's also a shift around nonlinear video that's going to be rising in 2018 as well.
So what do you mean by nonlinear?
Think choose your own adventure, right? You think like, I work closely with a group called Wirewax, and they're great. They have a platform that allows you to, sync in either contextual hotspots or branch content within a single video. So you can actually connect multiple linear videos in a nonlinear way. So you could take and watch the sections that are most interesting to you. That again is giving control back to the consumer to control the experience within a single kind of video format. So that's something to keep an eye on.
One of the challenges of searching, right, is knowing how to search, right?
Exactly.
So one of the challenges, like I want to say it right now, Alexa, subscribe podcast Words of Mass Disruption. Mm-hmm. So that should have subscribed me to anyone listen to it with an Alexa in the background. Yeah. But someone else says it. They go, Words of Mass Disruption, subscribe. Alexa, you need, you know, there's a barrier there. Like Kinect had that trouble with Microsoft, right?
Exactly.
With
Cortana. Exactly. That's where, you know, going back to, you know, we've all built, you know, websites and mobile applications. When you're building for voice experiences, a majority of the time is actually spending the upfront with the strategy, mapping out the different intents and doing exactly that, going through kind of the different variations of how someone's going to invoke your skill.
Because I'll see something on LinkedIn and go, okay, I just need to go get some information, do some research, come back and where to go.
Yeah.
Well, how did I get to that? I don't remember. And a lot of times the algorithms on these different systems are putting stuff in your feed. And I didn't control it popping up.
Right.
And the algorithm said, oh, he didn't really look at that. So it didn't put it back in my feed.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to go back to that.
That's right. That's a great, easy way to think about kind of machine learning as well, because machine learning is simply human-coded algorithms that drive some type of decisioning. So you can think about, you know, simple examples like your Netflix queue or exactly what you're mentioning with content across different sites and your news feeds. So that's just yet another way to where I'm a big believer that AI is ultimately going to be more about intelligence augmentation than replacing us as individuals. You know, you talk about the work that Ben does creatively, mm-hmm. phenomenal. It'd be very hard to replicate that from an AI standpoint. So what I look at is you take the blunt force computing and processing power associated with, you know, various forms of AI, applying that to problems, combined with the creativity and the intuition of an individual. And to me, how we're actually going to be adopting intelligent systems, it's more like we're talking about now, to where our virtual assistants are going to be taking and enhancing our lives on a regular basis versus trying to take over and control our lives and turn us into batteries like the Matrix.
Yeah, I saw some article today that said your next boss will be a robot.
Exactly.
You know, that was on Business Insider, I believe. So what did we learn today? So we learned that machine learning is human-coded algorithms that drive some sort of decisioning. So, for example, your Netflix queue and the suggestions they make of other movies you may or may not like, and how articles are posted in your various feeds, what ones they think you will respond to, or what ones make the most sense based on human-coded algorithms. AI is more about intelligence augmentation, using computing and processing power and applying it to problems combined with the creativeness and the intuition of real individuals. So we're still in the infancy of artificial intelligence. We're still 20 years away from what the movies depict artificial intelligence at, that really deep artificial intelligence. But the important things that will influence us today are the development of the ecosystem now. So how is the ecosystem influencing AI in the future? So some of the things we talked about was using that platform or the future platform to be creative and create new things. So it's not just about having the killer app, it's about having the app that will allow the individuals to create new things. We're already seeing this with the rise of the influence marketers. And how 69% of Gen Zs already have a YouTube channel where they're creating new content using their mobile devices. This is just one of the steps to true artificial intelligence. So thank you for listening this week. This was episode 119. This was part one of the conversation with Tom Edwards. Next week, we'll have episode 120, and that'll have part two, and we'll focus on personal brand, professional brand, developing those brands, and how to balance them, and the benefits of curating a great brand. Thank you.
Words of Mass Disruption. Words of Mass Disruption.
Everybody, that noise you hear in the background is an impromptu Von Wong photo shoot going on downstairs.
So. Great guy. Phenomenal work.
Yeah, you got to meet him. What'd you think of him?
Oh, man. Just incredibly impressive. The fact that, you know, the work that he does, it's not photoshopped. It's so just visually just stunning. You know, a lot of his work is tied to causes as well. So there's just a kind of a just incredible artist.
Yeah, it's amazing because I think most photographers, they spend a lot of time post, and he's like, it's almost done.
Yeah, it's almost done.
He does all the work ahead of time.
And it looks that way too.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And he doesn't sell it.
No.
That's awesome. It's commendable. I don't know if I could do that, but I think it's commendable.